Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom Foundation. We put on a conference every year in February. We're fortunate to have one this year before everything happened with this coronavirus. And so we're grateful for that. And now I'm interviewing people. I have a radio show called Voices of Women, and now I'm interviewing people who are friends of mine just to talk about what their life is like in this new era of this pandemic that's really impacting us around the world. And today I have Fran Howard with us, and Fran is a dear friend who traveled with me to Kenya when we worked at the school, Mary Omalo School, in western Kenya near Lake Victoria. And she came along with her son and daughter-in-law. And Fran is quite a trooper. She is 93 years old. You know, last year went to Kenya. This last December, she went to Chile. Is that correct?
That's right.
She went to Chile and studied with a shaman. And I'm sure she has some wise information to share with us. And so, Fran, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you have an interesting history. You have done quite a bit in your life.
Oh, gosh, where do I start? If I started at the beginning, we'd be here all afternoon. But I'm not sure exactly what to tell you.
I'll just start with, Well, you were a minister's wife. He's been pastor for about 20 years.
That's right.
You have done some interesting work of, is it compassionate listening and working with in the prison system?
Right. My husband died in 1998. He had been a minister in the United Church of Christ, and we had done a lot of traveling, and we were very involved even way back in the civil rights movement and all of those things, disruptive things in our country, right? Trying to ensure the rights for all people. So the times that we're living in right now are just a continuation of that for me.
Say more about that. How is it a continuation?
Well, because I think the virus has accentuated and brought out the inequality in a way that nothing else ever has. We are now beginning to see poverty and racism and all kinds of things that, I mean, granted, before this, it was in the news occasionally, but now it's very, very obvious. As I think about it, these are just such incredible times. I mean, I'm terribly saddened by all the life that's being lost and the jobs that are being lost and the connections with people that are being lost. That's a terrible price to pay for enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. But it is really focusing on what we need to do if we want to continue as a human species, I think. Maybe that's a little dramatic, but that's the way I'm viewing it, because I think the direction in which we were going was proving to be unsustainable. And I'm not saying that this is a punishment or that there's some angry God saying, I'll show you, and I finally got your attention. That may be exactly what's happening, but I don't believe in that kind of a God. So I think it's just nature playing itself out.
Yes, well, it is showing our systems are not working very well. And here, you know, they say we're the most powerful country in the world. You know, the greatest country, which, you know, I think every country is great in their own right, and, you know, the beauty of every culture. And yet, here we are with the most deaths, with the most people who have the virus, over 500,000 now. And it's showing our true colors. You know, if you read, I mean, it's kind of depressing. I go into grief. It happened to me Friday. I was feeling pretty good, pretty grounded and centered last week. And then reading about, like, in New York, where it's impacting people of color a lot more, who, you know, where people who have money can go to their second homes in the Hamptons or wherever, or they can work at home, where it's really the people of color, and they're talking about, you know, African American and Latinos, they are working the jobs that have to go work and serve us, you know, for the stores and things that need to be opened, the services that need to be opened. And so it is quite a big disparity of who is being impacted. And so it's, yeah, like you say, it's really showing the issues. And hopefully, I mean, I think people are hopeful that solutions will come about to make changes finally, because I mean, everybody's impacted around the world, and we're all seeing this and seeing the need. And I think there's some, you know, well, what do you see for going forward? I think there's this, we have this desire and this hope that going forward, we would see some real changes here because.
Right. Well, I'd like to just jump back a little bit to my background. All my life, really starting as a teenager, I have been interested in healing of some shape or form. And after I got out of college, I went on for further, I was an elementary school teacher for a while. And then I expanded that and I started teaching in a community college, displaced homemakers. I've always had a real heart for the dispossessed, people who didn't really get a fair shake in life. And after that, I went into training to become a psychotherapist. And I worked with families and couples. And the goal was always to help them remove the blocks that were in the way to achieving what their happiness, I guess I could put it that simply. I mean, I think happiness is what everybody wants. They don't necessarily want to have a big bank account or, as you said, a house in the Hamptons or everything, but most of us want to be happy. And there are lots of ways that we could achieve that. But over the years, I've just been very, very curious. Actually, I started out, I was the curious one in the family, I think. I was always curious, and I've had a tremendous, almost insatiable love of learning. And I was telling someone the other day that I almost feel like I'm in graduate school right now. I have learned so much about science and the brain and medicine. I'm not saying I'm an expert in any of them, but I'm very interested in what's going on. And I'm just fascinated by the coronavirus, you know, how it came to be. It's not even alive. And it's a parasite. And I see similarities in our world in other areas. I mean, there are things in our life that aren't even alive, but they attach themselves to us like a parasite. And we follow those. We try to kill things off.
Give us an example.
Well, I was thinking, we use the word war so much. We have wars on poverty and wars on this and wars on that. And my belief has come to be over the years that you don't get rid of things by killing them. You get rid of them by offering something better, and then everyone will gravitate toward that. That's the way I think it is. Now, I'm not saying that I can kind of really walk myself into a corner here because I don't really know science that well, but I'm not saying that we don't want to destroy things in the short run in order to then get on with the true healing. In my studies of healing over the years, I have found that there's a difference between healing and curing. Western medicine is more into getting rid of the symptoms. People have an ache, a pain, whether it's in their heart or in their liver or wherever it might be, and they go to the doctor and they want the pain removed. Obviously, they would prefer it if they found out that it was caused by something, that they could address that as well. But the shamans, who I've recently studied, believe in curing people. And that means looking at the underlying causes. When I was in training to become a therapist, I studied not with, but some of the things that he had written with Fritz Perls. And he used to say, I'm not interested in, I'm not interested in making you feel better. I want to cure you. And I think that has always followed me through life, and it's part of the what I'm looking at right now with regard to the coronavirus. I mean, I'm, of course, wanting it to disappear or get rid of it or vaccinate or whatever, but that's a whole nother story. But I really want to see that whatever is happening in this world now, if we could look at it and see, well, what is underneath all of our panic? what are we afraid of, really? And aren't we all afraid of dying? Isn't that what, I mean, nobody wants to get the virus. Why? Because they're watching people die. So that's what they're really afraid of. If they knew that where they're going to live, no matter what, they would probably be able to weather the storm a little bit better. But we see people just dropping dead in 3 days. That's very frightening. So,
and I think the fear also, for me, is about the fear of the unknown. You know, how long we're going to be living with this? How long we'd be isolated? Now you're living alone. How are you managing with that?
Well, the way you said that was interesting because I've lived alone now for 20 years since my husband died. And I lived almost 50 years with him, but I am really among the fortunate because I have four young adult children, who all of whom are married and live near me, except for one lives near Portland, but that's still close to me. And I, even now, somebody's over here at least every other day checking on me. Not that they think I am lonely or scared or anything, but we enjoy each other's company. We want to stay connected. So they do my shopping. I haven't been to a store in a month. And I kind of miss it, actually.
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
Yes.
I do. So I'm not lonely. I have a wonderful library in my own house that I've read everything in it, I think. I've got hundreds of books, but I could just read them over and over again. I have Alexa, is that what it's called? And I walk through where it is, and this morning I said, Beethoven, please. And I listen to the most beautiful Beethoven music for about an hour. And then I'll check and I'll say, well, how about Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah. Yes, and he comes on. What a miracle that is. So, I mean, and I have a beautiful back yard with a garden. My son Jim came over yesterday and turned the soil where I'm going to plant flowers and vegetables. So, I mean, I've just got a beautiful world. I texted him yesterday and I said, I am out on my deck looking at the most beautiful garden in Edmonds, which is where I live. Well, of course it is. It's the only one that I'm looking at. It is the most beautiful garden in Edmonds. And so I guess I'm rambling here, but over my many, many years, I have finally learned to be here now, as Ram Dass said. I'm living my life where I am. That's all I have.
You're fortunate. I mean, you've had a lot of years to practice that, you know, and plus, I mean, I'm hoping you're being safe with your children coming over. I'm sure you are, because you can.
They don't come in the house.
Right.
They sit 6 feet apart out on the deck or the lawn. And when they do grocery shopping and they bring it over, they're suited up, gloves, masks, the whole thing. They wash everything out on my potting bench before they put it on my steps and then I bring it in. I mean, it's a pain in a way.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But that's great that you connect. I mean, and you were talking about like Alexa and all these things that you can do. We're in this technological age. It's perfect timing for this to happen because, you know, 10 years ago, who did Zoom? Who did, you know, all this connecting other than emails? But it's, you know, to be able to talk face-to-face on a screen. And I have a backyard too. I had one person visit me, a friend of ours, mutual friend, Allison, where we sat in the backyard because you can access it from my alley. And I realized, oh, now that the weather's nice, you know, I can have some company safely. I have to be ultra safe. And I think you do too, given your age. But, you know, my husband, Chris, is immune suppressed. And so we don't go to any stores. We're for the first time going to pick up some groceries, but it'll be me, you know, he'll just stay in the car. And so we have to be extra careful, but we take walks every day. And I'm so grateful. We have a sunny week this week. It's beautiful out. I'm going to have to go get a pickup of flowers because I plant flowers in my pots in the backyard. So it's not looking the beauty that I want it to yet, but it will. And so we're fortunate we can do, you know, pickup. So I can't really, you know, even go into a nursery to, you know, find the plants. So it's just living in a different way. And sometimes we can get really discouraged in it or or I think we have to allow ourselves to flow with the emotions too, because it is a very emotional time, and you see your friends go up and down. I had somebody on the call a couple of days ago who was having a hard day and using all her tools of meditation, of reading, of listening to music, whatever. And, you know, and she just burst into tears. She just needed to cry. She just burst into tears on the Zoom call with me. She just needed to cry. And I think there's a place for that, because we're feeling the collective grief. We're feeling that that unknown, you know, how long will we be dealing with this, and how will it play out in the end? And there's talk of going back to work, and let's see, we're mid-April, it might be end of May. It doesn't mean the virus is gone. So for me, you know, my husband and I still have to be ultra cautious. It's just, maybe some people are going to be able to go back to work, but still people are going to have to be careful, because it can just resurge again. And that brings up that kind of anxiety too, of what will it be like when people go back to work?
Well, what you've just said has sparked another little thread in this conversation for me, and that is that, as I say, I've been on this life journey, pretty much all my life, and consciously knowing that that's what I was doing, and I realized that I had this kind of a vision in my mind that. We are part of the animal world, let's put it that way, or the plant world. We're all connected, and that I am in the winter of my life. I mean, and I've learned so much now to pay attention to where I am in my life. Spring is when, that's the birthing season, when you're planting seeds, and I know what that's like, and I can remember things I did at that. And summer is when you have fruit coming on the trees and growth happening. Fall is the harvest. And between summer and fall, I think a lot of people would like to stay at that place in their life. They're kind of exciting, you know, and you're vibrant and the flowers are beautiful and I'm beautiful and whatever, you know. And then comes winter. And that, well, in fall, by the way, yeah, the harvesting time where you harvest what you've grown. And I have certainly had the benefit of that through my children and seeing the fulfillment of many of my dreams. But then in winter, which is where I acknowledge I am now, that's a time, and I remember this from my childhood, when we had brought in the harvest, and now we've got these stores of things that we've saved to get through this dark period of our life. It seems dark, but and it's a time for just relaxing and enjoying the year and knowing that the next season is spring, and it's surely going to come. And so I have total confidence that there, when I finish with winter, and some people would say I have died, that there's a spring coming after that. I don't know yet how that's going to manifest, but I'm totally certain that since we are really just all energetic bodies, that I will have some consciousness at that point. That's about all I can say. But it's enough to give me confidence and hope that people are saying, we're going to get through this together. Yes, we are going to get through this. And some people are going to have their winter a little early this year. I talked to my niece yesterday who lives in Wyoming, and it was snowing. They had 5 feet of snow or something.
I've seen pictures of snow in Colorado and South Dakota.
So we say sometimes if someone dies in their prime or a child, oh, they died way too early before their time. Who's to say? I don't know. I just don't know. But I know that we are in an order that works and has since the beginning of time. During that time that I've had on Earth, I wanted to just share this with you. I have seen three distinct phases. The first is to... I wrote that down. Oh, wake up. I mean, we spend a lot of time in our earlier years. Some people never wake up, to be honest. I know a few people at my age who really haven't awakened yet. But to wake up and see what this is all about. What are we here for? And the second is to grow up. Once we wake up, then we can start on the path to exploring life, finding out what it really means. What am I here for? And we ask, whether we ever put it in words or not, I think we ask questions like, who am I? Who are you? What are we doing here? Those are all appropriate questions. And then when we get some answers to that, and this, I mean, it's not real linear. We go back and forth. The third one is to show up. And so that means to put your energy into what you have discovered. And I spent a lot of my, after I think I did wake up, and I'm still waking up to more because you'll never exhaust the universe. And I have grown up and I am now showing up. But before right now, I was a volunteer in the prison, as you said. I did a lot of things. I mean, that was after I moved out here. But I have done so many things that have put my money where my mouth is, to say, as they sometimes say, as well as my energy into causes that I believe in that will make this a better place, not just for me, but for everybody on the planet. So that's kind of a little brief summary of what my life has been like. And I recognize that I am privileged beyond measure. So the only thing I can say that just gives me more responsibility to do more. But I also know that the time for me has passed to sign up for another volunteer position or to do, you know, stuff that's might me going to invite me to go out into the community and do things physically, perhaps. I'm in good physical condition, but I can really identify in myself that this is a time for introspection, for passing on the wisdom that I have learned, not by preaching, but just by the way I live, and taking care of myself so that I won't have to exhaust somebody else's energy taking care of me. I spend a lot of time now that I'm isolated in my home cooking, believe it or not. Yesterday I made ice cream bars, believe it or not.
Send me the recipe.
It was wonderful. They were made out of almond milk and monk fruit for sweetener and a little bit of, vanilla. It was very simple. And I had those little things that you get in the dollar store where you can fill them up with a little stick in it, you know. And Jim stopped by in the afternoon and we sat out on the porch, out on the deck, having our little ice cream bars. And it's just fun. I've been enjoying just making interesting meals out of what I've got in my house.
Yes, I think a lot of that's going on. I am too. And, you know, it's interesting to think of, yeah, just pull some things out of your pantry that probably is getting near outdated and right. Throw some things together. You can be quite creative. And I, you know, they talk about the COVID-15, you know, gaining 15 pounds, but I gained weight in the beginning, but now we sort of ate through the ice cream and the chips and I feel the need for munchies, like, okay, where are my munchies? But I'm back down. I've lost those 4 pounds and feeling pretty good, although we're going to be getting some things in the store. There's just that desire to kind of, and I can imagine with a lot of people like, okay, what am I going to do? And you walk around the kitchen like, okay, what can I eat to make me feel better? Or, you know, have that instant gratification of having a treat, you know, that's, you know, it's a natural thing as people to do that. And so right. It's a lot of talk of gaining weight.
I'm glad I have two containers of cocoa. I love cocoa. I often just sprinkle it on things, but I'm finding I can make interesting things, little sauces and stuff like that, and pour it on some fruit or whatever, you know. So, I'm pretty much on a sugar-free diet by choice. But there is something about chocolate that just fills that little yearning for something sweet every now and then.
Yes. Well, I know when you came back from Chile, like totally changed your diet. Like you're a healthy woman at 93, I have to say. And yet you came back and totally changed to gluten-free, meat-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, everything-free.
Well, I'll tell you the reason for that. And this is one of the major things I learned on that a training that I went to is that we are such a toxic society, and that not only what we eat, sugar being one of the worst ones. And I didn't think I ate much sugar until I decided to give it up in all forms. And it's in everything. I don't have to put it there. It's in everything, as you well know. And that as long as, and then of course the toxins that we get in our pesticides, which comes to us in foods that we buy, and the toxins in the air. Have you noticed, by the way, how clear the atmosphere is?
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah. So all of those things made me decide that I did not want to continue to pollute my body, my physical body, because one of the worst places all of these toxins settle is in our brain. I didn't even know that. And that we spent a few days down there just detoxifying our brain. And it was quite astounding how clear things became, not only clear thinking, brain fog lifts. You look out and you think you've been on some kind of a trip, you know, that everything seems so bright and shiny. And yeah, it's amazing how accustomed we become to living in a toxic world. And then we develop diseases that our ancestors never had, like Alzheimer's and heart disease and cancer. They were unknown way back thousands of years ago, as far as I can discern. So I've just decided that that's one of the tasks that I have given to myself now. And I don't want any more stuff in my life. I don't have anything on my bucket list, but I do want to have my body be healthy as long as I am here. And so that's why I hope I'm not too fanatical about it. I probably was initially, but I've settled into it now and it seems quite natural.
That's good. Yeah, it takes a little bit. I know I had you over for dinner and you and your family, and it was like, well, we're kind of boring, but you know, I found things to make that fit your diet, and it doesn't have to be that hard, but I think if you do it every day, then you probably have to think through, okay, how am I going to live this way? And
right. And of course, one of the worst toxins that we put, I wanted to preface this by saying that this is the mythology of the shamans, and it's not just them alone. And that is that we have an energy field around us. They call it our luminous body. And it's when our sacred figures like Jesus and Buddha and so forth, they have sort of a halo over their head. In a way, that's kind of what that represents. I have no problem at all believing that, since we are energetic bodies. Mm-hmm. And that we have control over what is in that energy field. And that is how our body and our life exists. It feeds off of what is in our energetic field. So I'm very conscious now of what I put in it. And that includes my thoughts. And it brings me to the place where I monitor my thoughts. And when I get in a rage after I've watched the news or something, I just think, why did I ever turn that on? Maybe I don't need to listen to the news so often. Mm-hmm. So it has a little impact on how I'm structuring my time. And it also brings me, calls attention to my need to forgive, not only myself for who I am or what I thought I was or whatever, and the judgments that I've made against other people. These are all areas of what we put into this energy field. So it's a total package, and you don't have to go to Chile or study shamanism. I mean, this is something that anybody could figure out on their own with a little help from the enlightened beings.
Yes, well, yeah, it's so true. And what we put into ourselves does, you know, impacts how we are in the world, and, you know, which includes food. But you're, I love what you say about thoughts and words. Our words are very important. And you even said in the beginning about, you know, killing, you know, the wars, oh, let's kill this disease. And there always, there's that language of against something, and to reframe it for, what are you for? You know, what are you fighting for? I'm against people who XYZ. No, I'm a for. I want to develop. I want this to happen in the world. I want to see the world like this. I want these people around me.
Absolutely, and that's as important as what you put in is what you repel. You don't let certain things in, and you can still be with people who hold different views about things than you do, but you can put up kind of a little filter between you and that person. So you're observing things, you're listening to what they're saying, but you're not getting all geared up to fight what they had to say and tell them how wrong they are and shame them or whatever. You just, or subtly kind of veer off onto another subject if it gets too heavy. I mean,
yeah, there and are not, ways. To not take it on. When you're talking about, it's like to not take it on, like being an observer. And sometimes it's good to see the differences. It's good to see, you know, people. It kind of educates us of what's out there in the world and what you want to bring into, you know, and you can say no to people. You can, you know, people have a hard time doing that. Like, okay, I have to be friends with these people, or these are family is important. But if they're actually toxic to you, you can select that that's not for me.
That's right. And then the other part of that, which is a little bit more difficult, I think, is to really learn to love every being, and don't just identify them by their belief system. Really sort of go into, who is this person? This person is a sacred being just like I am. And if for no other reason than for my own benefit, I will treat this person with dignity and respect. And I honestly believe that has a, you know, one has a better chance of, if you wanted to, change that person's views doing that than to arguing with them.
Yes, and I've felt too, like you can love people, you don't have to like them. You don't have to like what they do or what they believe or buy into it, but you can love them. Yeah, as you say, as sacred beings. And, right. And we don't know what how they got to where they're going, where they are right now. We don't know what their life has been like that caused them to have these opinions or those viewpoints or those prejudices or whatever. We don't know. We're not walking in their shoes. And so it's almost like you're talking about, it's almost like putting a love filter in between, you know, to just accept them for who they are, bless them on their way, you know, and sometimes it's that. Well, it's been great talking to you and sharing your wisdom. You are my role model. I want to be like you at 93. I got 20 years or plus to get there, but really you're just a shining example of what an elder in their winter years.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I feel like it's been a blessing to live this long because I've had so much time to explore this beautiful life I've been given. And I would second what you said about me. You are one of the kindest, dearest persons I've known, and one of the blessings of my life too.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a joy to travel with you. I hope we could travel again. Who knows? We don't know.
Well, we'll do it on Zoom if nothing else, right?
That's true. Okay, well, take care and be safe.
Thank you so much.